Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game. It's right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It is Thursday, which means it's time to bring in one of our favorite people. She is kind enough to take the time on Thursday mornings to swing by and talk some South Carolina Gamecock athletics with us. She covers that athletic department for the Greenville News. She is the lovely Lulu Kesson swinging by. What is up, Lulu? How do you do?
Good morning. I'm good. Happy Thursday. How are you guys?
Spectacular. Got a great NBA Finals going down. We're picking up the Stanley Cup Finals tonight. We've got the U.S. Open at Oakmont ready to torture some golfers the next couple of days. It's a good time to be a sports fan, Lulu Kesson.
Absolutely. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
All right. Let's get into it a little bit. I will start with this, and this is really, I think, more going to be an opportunity to opine and editorialize, but we found out yesterday that the Palmetto Bowl this year, Clemson v. South Carolina, obviously Willie B. hosting the event this year. This game is going to be at noon on Rivalry Saturday, and I'm intrigued by that because noon is obviously going up against the game in Michigan, Ohio State. So it's a time where it's a notorious rivalry time slot for a good rivalry. It was either going to be this or I thought prime time at night. And the reason I thought so was I think both of these teams are potential playoff teams. Clemson more likely than South Carolina, but I think South Carolina can probably sneak into that 12 spot with a good enough year. But I also think it's a very good chance, as we've talked about before, we might have two Heisman finalists competing, and this might be a game that dictates who, if either one of them does win it, wins it. Does this game being scheduled at noon mean anything to you? Does it say anything to you about what the TV networks and what the conferences believe this game is going to be?
I think we're all talking about it because it's very interesting, because it does feel like, and granted, like a lot of the South Carolina games that were listed yesterday were under, you know, a flex window, which meant they could start as late as 8 p.m., but also start as early as 3:30. We just won't know. And so with the Clemson-South Carolina game being just like, you know, last year we waited a very long time to know. I want to say like we found out mid to late November. So to know, you know, going into July, August, and then the season, that the biggest game of the year for these two teams, like I think Clemson and South Carolina both know that regardless of how good the other one is this year or any year for that matter, like it's a rivalry game. Like it's the game they care about the most in terms of emotional factors. I think that even though they'll have games where they need to win more maybe, but a noon, it's like South Carolina fans were really complaining about it. And I get it. It's weird. It's early. You know, you want a night game in Willie B. But at the same time, South Carolina has won, you know, two of the last for home, like early day games. Obviously last year was early, and then in 2022. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing based on how South Carolina has performed against Clemson, you know, early. The other thing is, like, it's Clemson, the one that has to travel. Obviously they'll be there before Saturday morning, but there's additional factors that I think fans probably can lean into to cope. But I say to cope because I do think it's a little odd that the TV didn't kind of, I don't know, like wait to see, but also just value the night, the potential night factor of this game, really. I think it's a little odd. I do just think it's a little odd.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that we are kind of conditioned, and I think a lot of this is especially for those of us that are NFL fans, it kind of bleeds over to believe that night game makes it highlight game, right? Like night game makes it primetime game. Your Monday Night Football is a night game. Sunday Night Football, the most watched game on Sunday, is a night game. That's where you want the best matchups. And I think we are to some degree conditioned to believe that that is kind of how it operates at the college level too. But college, because there is so many games, and especially on rivalry weekend where there are not just so many games, but so many really good games on Thanksgiving weekend, I think to have the shot called this far out, to have the shot called where you've put a name on it, and by the way, there are right now, of major divisional games on that Saturday, there are only two that have been assigned a time, Lulu Kesson, Clemson, South Carolina, and Ohio State, Michigan. That Clemson, South Carolina game, obviously going up against the game that is watched in the early slot. The fact that it got put there, if I'm just being the, you know, optimistic, wearing the Palmetto State colors on the sleeve, tells me that there is value to this game, that they want to go ahead, get it on the docket, put it in a slot where it's going to be up against the game, Michigan-Ohio State. I heard somebody say yesterday, well, that's just a get-it-out-of-the-way time, right? Like, nobody's going out of the way to watch that when Michigan-Ohio State is on, but college football fans are able to multitask on Saturdays. They're watching multiple games. To put it into that slot and to announce it this early that it has a time slot when Alabama-Auburn doesn't have a time slot. Oregon-Washington doesn't have a time slot. Some of the great rivalries don't have time slots. Tells me that, or at least I would like to believe that, there is some focus on this game as a very important game this year.
Yeah, I do also hope that it's that. And I say hope because I think it's important. It's a huge game, and I think it's obviously, regardless of how these two teams, you know, it's tricky. South Carolina, technically Clemson, both of them could drop goose eggs this year and just be a lot worse than we expect. But I think that overall, everybody knows that these are going to be two really great teams. And so I do agree with your viewpoint and your point being like, let's kind of be optimistic and hope that they're recognizing like, hey, we don't need to see these two teams win five games in 2025. Like, we know ahead of the season that they're going to be great and that it's going to be a great game.
Yeah, I'm intrigued, and especially considering, I mean, this very much could be a game where one end or both teams might be playing for their playoff lives. I mean, could you imagine a Palmetto Bowl at noon up against Michigan-Ohio State that you look at it and you go, okay, Michigan-Ohio State, that's probably a race for the Big Ten title position. That's probably a race for clubhouse leader going into the postseason. That is probably a spot where somebody's playing to have a top four spot in the playoffs. On the flip side, Clemson, South Carolina up against that might be a game where it's two teams playing to make it to the playoffs, whether it is trying for Clemson, who we'll probably know if they're in the ACC title game at that point or not. But with playoff seedings not being determined by conference champions this year, but just by the top four seeds, Clemson might be playing for the right to stay inside of the top 12, 10, 5, 4, and maybe have one of those top four seeds in a bye. South Carolina may be playing just to prove, hey, we can beat a top five team, a top 10 team, and punch a ticket because that's a big-time resume builder. As far as I'm concerned, like right now, I was just looking down that list of Saturday games, and especially with, you know, like LSU-Arkansas is gone, it's LSU-Oklahoma. I guess that might be an interesting one. You got, obviously, the Iron Bowl. You got Florida State-Florida. Nobody cares about that game this year. Man, when I look up and down the schedule, and I don't think I'm saying this because I live here and it's a silver linings kind of call here, That genuinely might be the second best rivalry game on the slate for that Saturday at this point.
Absolutely. And even the classic ones, like, yeah, the Egg Bowl is fun to watch, but it's like Ole Miss is going to, like, Mississippi State doesn't have a team right now that can compete with even an Ole Miss team that's expected to take a step back. Like, I think rivalry games will always have, you know, the aspects to a rivalry, and that's what makes them great. But I think realistically, fans are valuing, are starting to value the quality of the football versus the history nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, I listen, if the Egg Bowl is getting played on Friday at noon and my other options are, let's see, Iowa, Nebraska, Georgia, Georgia Tech, like, sure, I'll watch it because it's a good rivalry game. You know, there's going to be some pads popping out there. But if it's, if we're talking about games where the football's good and the result matters, I think this one's got an opportunity to be a real big one. Let's take a look at some of the other things that were announced in the schedule yesterday. By the way, if you're looking where to find it, go to Lulu Kessin's Twitter handle, at Lulu Kessin, or just go to Greenville News on, or excuse me, greenvilleonline.com. She has broken the whole thing down there. I was looking at the rest of this window. The other game, one of the other games we know a time for, Lulu, is the season opener on August 31st against Virginia Tech. That is going to be a 3 p.m. Sunday kickoff between Shane Beamer's dad's school and Shane Beamer's school. You know, obviously, first one on the schedule, we're still a very long ways out from that game being played, but it being a big out-of-conference game, it drawing enough attention to get selected to go play in Atlanta, and it being selected to be the premier game in that time slot on Sunday before the NFL starts up. Again, like, I don't think Virginia Tech is necessarily a great team. I do think they have got a good head coach and are trending upwards. But the fact that that game is, to me, the highlight game in that 3 p.m. slot on Sunday, again, tells me this team's getting more respect than it has gotten the last couple of years. And I don't think that's an optimistic take. I think it's a realistic one.
Absolutely. And I do think that, and granted, like, I'm not trying to have, you know, tunnel vision where I can't act like any other quarterback outside of Columbia is, like, television worthy. But I also think that, like, in the last year, Lenoris and even Shane, in the way that he kind of carries himself, like, they're good TV. The way Lenoris plays, he's incredible to watch. And there have been many times where I've talked to people, you know, throughout different networks that I've met, whether those are, you know, on-air people or producers, and you go to these games and they're like, yeah, he's mesmerizing. Like, we're in the studio, we're in the booth, we're on site, whatever. And we're just amazed watching the way that he plays. It's so different. It's so, you know, it's so great that he's so young. And then you have obviously Shane, who can do anything from dance to go at Brett Bielema. Like, there's a range in what he is. And again, I know that TV isn't sitting there being like, oh, Shane's, you know, great, Lenoris is great, that's why they're in these primetime spots. There's so much more to that. But I also think that that all circles, like, that all matters when you're talking about the rise of South Carolina football, because at the same time, it's not just a group of people who are, you know, starting to be good. It's a team, it's a program that can be really public and really open about who they are while being really good. And I think any network latches on to that. And I think, like, for example, I think that really worked out in their favor during the LSU college game day appearance, because that, even though South Carolina was 2-0 heading into it, a lot of the game day guys, like, weren't really confident in South Carolina, but because of how much South Carolina was willing to give, whether that was, like, talking about their season behind the scenes, et cetera, it gave a little bit more than just the underdog story trying to beat LSU.
No, I totally agree. And I think that when you have Shane, who was willing to do those extra segments and show up and put himself out there, when you have the fans that I mean, I remember watching every minute of that game day, and the South Carolina fans were fantastic television that morning. And then they put on a hell of a football game against an LSU team that everybody picked, and it ended up being one of the most controversial games of the year, honestly. And a lot of people outside of SEC territory were commenting on the fact that, you know, we kind of feel like South Carolina got screwed by the refs a little bit late in that game. They almost became, and again, maybe I'm looking at this through, you know, garnet colored glasses, but it felt like that game, that LSU game, and a lot of it had to do with game day being there and the fans being a focus and how electric the environment was. And then the end of that game, it felt to me like after that game, South Carolina kind of became a little bit of the America's sweetheart role, right? Like a little bit of a media darling. People were like, oh, maybe this team has got a little gas, a little juice to it, and they should have had that upset in the bag right there. And I think that that has rolled over into this year because, again, I said they're the premier game. That's the only college football game on in that time slot on Sunday in the season opener. You've got that Clemson game time that is slated and scheduled, and then you brought it up at the beginning of the conversation, Lulu Kesson. The fact that so many of these games have been flexed timed, which means they could be late afternoon games, but they leave the option on the table to make them nighttime games, means that, at least to me, ESPN, ABC, the Disney folks are looking and going, we need to make sure we're in a spot where if this team ends up being an electric team that's got a good team and is winning games, we have the option to put them on at nighttime and primetime. That's, to me, that's why there are so many flex games on this schedule. Did you have the same takeaway?
Absolutely, and you can't help but think, too, like, obviously, the opponents matter in the sense that flex games are games that were either controversial or highly competitive. Like the Missouri game, a flex game, ended on a with a touchdown with 8 seconds left. Kentucky, South Carolina, like sort of unexpectedly blew them out and really pissed off Mark Stoops. You know, obviously, I think we can all be real. LSU is, I can't see that not being like a 7-8 p.m. kick. Like, I know it's a flex, but like, I don't think they're going to make a Tiger Stadium South Carolina rematch like we're just talking about from last year. Like Oklahoma, they just said, okay, that's an early game, and South Carolina had no issue with them last year. And then like Alabama, Ole Miss, they're kind of able to look at it like, okay, these could be really good games, or they could, you know, they're two sort of unpredictable teams in that sense. And in my opinion, LSU and Alabama are the best opportunities for South Carolina to prove that they're mentally tough this year and that they can take what happened last year and, you know, turn it into a productive win. Will it happen? I don't know. But exactly to your point, like the fact that these games people are on are basically being like, okay, let's make sure that if it is going to be a big game that we get it. And I think that understanding that that there's that potential in, you know, June is a reflection on the respect for South Carolina's program.
Lulu Kesson of the Greenville News joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. All right, real quick before we let you go, Lulu, I know Shane was frustrated. We talked about it last week. I think we kind of have to check back in. Do we have an update on Rashul Faison? I know there's been the conversation about Shane kind of felt like it was hurry up and wait. We gave you everything you needed. We've got nothing back from the NCAA. The NCAA turns out been a little busy the last couple of weeks with the House v. NCAA settlement coming down the pipe last Friday. Do we have an update on that situation?
So we don't, and the worry, I think a couple of us are sort of worried because last night a transfer running back committed from Colorado. Don't get me wrong, I think that regardless if he can or can't play, South Carolina's running back room needed a lot of help. So I don't think that because a running back committed as a transfer, like, oh, that means that we're about to find out that Faison is unable to play. But I just think that the fact that we haven't heard anything yet, and it leaves the door open for interpretation. That said, it's so tricky. Like, I don't know how for both Faison and Shane, they're mentally going through it. And I'm not trying to like act as though it's this massive deal, but to not know if you can actually play or not when you're heading into July is just, it's a lot to work around mentally, and I'm curious to see how it all plays out, either result.
Completely agree. All right, we got about a minute left, Lulu, but I do have to ask, and this probably deserved more time, but after the House v. NCAA settlement dropped last Friday, I know there have been a number of coaches that have been very open in discussing it, a lot that have been very closed off and have not said a word about it. Is there any conversation around the campus from any coaches, football, basketball, baseball, soccer, whatever, is there any conversation on campus about what this settlement means for the University of South Carolina?
Yes and no. I think some coaches have been open about it. I talked to Don about it in January, basically after a little bit with some of the Title IX stuff where I had just talked to her about, you know, if there isn't any legal protection where women's sports, you know, are legally basically like obligated to have some of the money if the settlement were to pass. And I've talked to Shane about it here and there. I think most coaches who, and again, like we have not gotten numbers in terms of what it's actually going to look like now that it's passed for South Carolina. That said, I do think a lot of the coaches, whether that be Don or whether that be, you know, a softball or a baseball or a coach, or basically a good team that isn't football, understands that they're still going to have their players depend on NIL for money, and that it isn't just going to be a result of this house settlement. But I think from what I've heard off the record, I think people, there's been no issue with the way that the money is potentially being divided amongst South Carolina teams.
Interesting. Interesting. I will be very interested to see what we get out of these coaches, especially after the appeals process and all that is completed. Lulu Kessin is kind enough to give us some time every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. to check in with the Gamecock Athletic Department. Lulu, I appreciate you. I appreciate the time. Thank you very much. Go enjoy the weekend.
Thank you so much. Always great to talk to you both. Have a great rest of your weekend.
You are the best. You too. Thank you very much, Lulu Kessin. Again, follow her on X at Lulu Kessin, K-E-S-I-N. If you are a South Carolina fan of any and all sports, she is without a doubt a must-follow, constantly keeping you updated on what is happening in Gamecock athletics. All right, when we come back, the U.S. Open underway at Oakmont, an event that I think makes grass growing interesting. That's how good it's going to be. We'll check in on the early leaderboard. We'll see what's happening in the reactions when we come back on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Fine!
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
I like this song. It's bouncy.
Yeah, but I played it going out. I played it coming back, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it just, I
genuinely, when it started a second ago, I was like, why is this song stuck in my head? And now it makes sense. Now it makes sense.
It also sounds like a band that you listen to.
It does sound like a band I listen to.
Chris would right away know what I'm talking about. It's one of those.
It's kind of Weezer-y. Right? It's a little Weezer-y, maybe a little like very early R.E.M.-y, right?
Maybe.
Little R.E.M.-y early.
I don't know why
early.
Bowling for Soup pops in my mind.
That's not a bad pick either. They would take something like this and then get real punk on it at the end, and I'm good with that. U.S. Open taking place at Oakmont. We do have a handful of golfers out on the course so far. Actually, a pretty good, healthy number of golfers out on the course so far. J.J. Spahn is 2-under through 4. He is your early leader. Again, through 4. Let's not start losing our mind yet. Adam Scott 1-under through 3. So is Ludvig Åberg. Rory McIlroy is 1-under through 2. This is really interesting, and I'm actually a little worried about Rory, so I really genuinely hope that he has a good round one, because I do not think that Rory right now is in bounce back mode. He got his Masters. He got his green jacket. It was super emotional for those of us that have been following the saga of Rory. Seeing him get that green jacket was great. It was awesome, whatever. Then Rory just kind of fell off the cliff, and I don't know if he was just able to turn off the mental block for Augusta, or just really got lucky down the stretch that nobody caught him. Obviously, we saw some guys that kind of fell off down the end, whatever. But since then, Rory has not been playing his best golf. And if you go back a couple of tournaments ago to the PGA Championship, you will remember that Rory lost his driver going into that event. They test the drivers randomly throughout the year. It happens to guys. Scottie Scheffler had the same thing happen, right? He lost his driver. He had to go backup driver at the start of that tournament, but he would end up winning that tournament. So yesterday I was watching Rory McIlroy's last press conference, post-practice, before they got out there to go get round one teed off today. And a media guy asked Rory McIlroy, have you decided on a new driver? And Rory simply said, yes. And the guy was like, okay, do you want to tell us what model driver you are using for those of us that care? And Rory said, it's a TaylorMade. That's it. And then the guy just kind of went, okay. And he went, if you want to find out, come out and watch me hit balls. You'll see exactly what I'm using. And then kind of didn't say it, but kind of gave the, if not, shut up next question. And I think the reason why was that a lot of us wanted to kind of give the last second equipment change of arguably at that PGA Championship the most important club in the bag for him, because it was the driver that he was working very well with at the Masters that won him that golf tournament.
You say he lost it. Did it break or something?
No, it failed testing. And so the PGA said, you can't use this.
I didn't realize that clubs were tested that way.
They are.
Like NASCAR. It's
very much like NASCAR. They test it. It has to fit within certain parameters. It has to fit within certain weights and angles.
So it has passed all the other ones? Or do they get new ones for...
Well,
stuff like this.
Yeah, they'll get new clubs, but if you show up to that tournament without that with that driver and they test it and say you can't use this driver, you may have practiced all week with that driver, and then going out to one on Thursday, you got a new driver in the bag that maybe you haven't gotten the opportunity to really dial in yet. It's a big deal.
Is that the only club they test?
No, they test all the clubs, but my understanding from talking to some of the golf bros is that the driver is the one that gets tested the most frequently. It's the most important stick in the bag. So outside of the putter, obviously. So it's
probably the one easiest to enhance if you need it because of its size.
It is, but this is not just about enhancement. This is also about, down to thickness and rigidity of the club face, right? And what happens is a brand new driver may fit within the parameters, but as these guys use the driver and as they hit it, because you got to keep in mind, this is the driver they're using to hit 1,000 balls on the range every day. It's the driver they're using for their practice rounds. It's the driver they're using for their actual rounds. As you wear that driver down with usage, eventually the club face is going to fall out of standard and you're going to have to upgrade it. And for most of these guys, you hope that you catch it either at a smaller tournament or you hope that you catch it in testing like on an off week or on a Monday so that you can pick out your new driver. Rory did not. He had to go back up. He had very little time to prepare to use it. And a lot of us, and myself included, think that having to make that last minute switch at the PGA Championship and having to try to figure out a new club while you're playing, which again, I got myself a new driver summer of last year and gave myself no practice time before I took it out and tried to play around with it. And I sucked with this driver. Now, since then, I've gotten dialed in. It's a customizable driver. You can change the angle on it. You can move the weight on it to the front of the club, to the back of the club, and all that impacts how your shot is shaped. Do you hit it higher, lower? Do you hook it? Do you draw it? Do you add a fade on it? You know, do you just pipe it down the middle? Whatever. It took me a while to dial that driver in, and I am not on the PGA Tour, nor was I so committed to my old driver that I had, you know, and again, I had a lot of rounds under it, so I'd kind of figured it out, but it wasn't like I was like, oh, this is going to ruin my round. You go out there playing for a $2 million first place prize and get told 24 hours before you play, you got to have a whole new stick, can throw your game off. And I think that's what happened to Rory. So I was listening to his presser yesterday after practice, his last one before he got out there today for round number one, and he was very short about the driver. He was like, yeah, I picked a new one. What do you want to tell us? It's TaylorMade. What are you going to tell us, what model? No, if you want to find out, come out and watch me hit golf balls. Like, he just wasn't interested in the conversation. And it came across as, outside of Live Tour conversations, uncharacteristically short of Rory McIlroy, who is usually a guy who is pretty willing to talk about his game and what's going on and where he is and all that. And I just got the impression that this dude is either, and we'll find out, I think, real quick, because again, the margin for error, even on day one at Oakmont, is zero. There's just no room to screw up. You screw up on this course, you're getting into a spot where you're going to be mentally and physically challenged after your tee shot. Rory McIlroy, and I can't tell because, again, it was one press conference that lasted, you know, 10 minutes of questions. Rory McIlroy is a cat that in that spot, I could not tell if this guy is either completely bleeping locked in or if he is completely checked out. If he was either so locked in that he's like, I'm not talking about any of this, right? Like, I just want to get out there and hit golf balls. Or if the, let's call it what it is, failures after the Masters, which every tournament after the Masters has been a failure for a guy who was coming off the most prestigious win on the golf circuit and the most important win of his career. I don't know if the pressure either got to him and he checked back out, or if he just got tired of what was happening, dialed in the driver, and he's going to be a dude. So one of two things is going to happen here. Rory McIlroy is either going to be a fantastic opening day bet to win this tournament, or he's not making it to Saturday. Because with Oakmont, with this course being what this course is this year, with the conditions it is going to be playing under, with the rough setup the way that it is, with the greens rolling. Somebody yesterday described putting on this green as, and in fact, it was a texter to Wire to Wire, which I thought was a great text. And I think it's pretty accurate. He said, if you want to know what putting on this green is like, put the golf ball in the back of your bathtub and try to put it into the drain, right? Like, even if you're not a golfer, a golf guy, I hope that you take a shower. So you know what the bottom of a bathtub is like, right? You know how hard that surface is. He said, imagine putting a golf ball in the back of your bathtub and trying to put it into the drain. That is, I think, from what I've read, a pretty apt description of what the greens are going to be like. Well, Rory's putting is going to be irrelevant if he's taken four to get to the green on every par four because he keeps driving off into the woods, which has been something he's done the last couple of tournaments. So I would love to say that, you know, I've been watching the practices because I'm the loser that watches golf practice in the lead up to a major championship. in watching the practices, the footage of Rory out on the range, out on the course, getting a couple of warm-up rounds in, whatever. I would love to be able to say, oh, this dude, post this press conference, is most definitely locked in. He understands the importance of showing back up at this golf tournament. But I think the opposite might be true, too. I think the loss of the driver, which led to a blow-up at the PGA Championship and nothing happening for him since then, we know Rory McIlroy's a guy who can, unfortunately sometimes, get lost inside of his own head. And if this short exchange with the reporter yesterday was because he is indeed locked inside of his own head, this course is going to chew him up and spit him out this weekend. Actually, not even this weekend, because I don't think he'd make it there. I'm interested. He is one under through two. That's a hell of a start to the day. Anybody that shoots an under number on the front nine today is in a good spot. There's a lot of guys out there. Justin Rose is even through three. Shane Lowry, even through three. Wyndham Clark, Lucas Glover. All these guys start off at even, and even to be a great score on day one. Great score on day one. Rory came out birdie on two to give himself a shot. We'll see what happens. All right, no Rashad Beard, so he will not join us when we come back. But we do have a little bit more information on the appeal put forward by a group of female college athletes against the House v NCAA settlement. I'll tell you what updated information we have and give you my reaction to it next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
The House v. NCAA settlement is the conversation of the week. It dropped, approved, finalized last Friday night, and we have spent this week, learning quite a bit about the new College Sports Commission, about who is going to be in charge of running it, about how schools are reacting to this. We have heard from athletic directors. We have heard from, finally on Tuesday, Charlie Baker. We have just been kind of following where this is going to go. And I do think that is important because this is something that is not only the most monumental, I think, moment of our lifetimes in college sports, I think it is also something that contains, as I said on Monday, quite a few vagaries that I think will have to be ironed out as we move forward into the house era of college athletics. So my gut reaction to the house settlement was, okay, great. We have a roadmap. We have concepts. We have guideposts. We have ideas. We have some rules. We also have the floor open for more of them. So there is one thing that, however, is a major sticking point, and that is the possibility of an appeal coming down the pipe. Not just an appeal, because I think appeals are guaranteed, but an appeal that has the possibility of having enough gas to it that it would cause a stay on the settlement. Effectively, an appellate judge somewhere would step in and say, this appeal that has been filed definitely has merit to it. And as it has merit to it, we are going to put all of the resulting consequences of this settlement on hold until we hear the appeal, we rule on the appeal, and we decide changes must be made to the terms of the settlement. The settlement is no good, must be thrown out, or this appeal, while it does have merit, does not have enough to justify making changes, whatever they end up getting to. So the first appeal has been filed that may have the weight to change or do something. 8 female athletes have filed an appeal of the House v. NCAA settlement in a California federal court, arguing that the landmark agreement violates Title IX. According to the New York Times, the appeal only addresses the back damages portion of the settlement, not the portion that establishes the system of revenue sharing with athletes. That is something that we had to go learn. Now we know this is only about the $2.8 billion that are going to be back paid. The settlement that was obviously approved last Friday drew some objections related to Title IX, which is the federal law that prohibits sex-based discrimination in education and requires schools to offer equitable opportunities to women, including in sports. Now, I will say there is one thing to keep in mind about this, and that is that a lot of these appeals, a lot of the objections to the House v. NCAA settlement in terms of potential Title IX violations were brought to the table under the settlement process and were rejected by Judge Claudia Wilkin, who did not see any of them as moving. In fact, she repeatedly said during the process and in the settlement ruling that the antitrust case had nothing to do with Title IX. Of course, she did leave the door open for future lawsuits based on Title IX, targeting how future payments from schools to athletes will be made. But she left the door open. She did not rule that the settlement was good or not good or whatever, obviously, based on potential Title IX ramifications down the line. She basically said, y'all gonna have to figure that out. Y'all gonna have to make sure you are in compliance with Title IX as we move forward with all of this. So the New York Times reports that the appeal, as of now, will not impact revenue sharing, which is slated to start on July 1st for all schools that have opted in. Remember, the Power Four schools are all opted in. Other schools outside of the Power Four have the opportunity, if they wish, to opt into the revenue sharing plan, but they must state that intention by, I believe, June 15th was the deadline. So like by Monday, I think, was the deadline, somewhere around there. And then the revenue sharing would go into effect on July 1st. That would be when schools can begin to decide where that revenue is going to be shared and to whomst that revenue is going to be shared. John Clune is the attorney who represents the eight women filing the appeal, said he filed the objection during the settlement adjudication process, but said nothing came of that. He said, quote, "We felt like we were standing on the table, waving our arms, that somebody had to address this issue, but none of the parties involved wanted to address it, and the courts didn't want to address it." Clune told The Athletic, saying that Title IX was, quote, "deliberately ignored," end quote, in the settlement process, and that the appeal, quote, "was the only option." He said, quote, "The injunction set by the court and agreed to by the NCAA, defendant conferences, and student-athlete plaintiffs provides significant stability to college sports and enables schools to provide direct financial benefits to student-athletes, totaling nearly 50% of athletics department revenue. The NCAA is moving forward with implementing the settlement injunction to deliver this massive win for student-athletes." But Jeffrey Kessler, who is one of the two lead plaintiffs' attorneys in the settlement, said, "The Title IX issues do not belong in this antitrust case. They were thoroughly considered and properly rejected by the district court, yet these objectors are callously delaying the distribution of damages to more than 100,000 athletes waiting for them so that they can..." Okay, you know Don Quixote? The old story about the Spanish, knight who goes chasing windmills.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
His name got turned into a word that I'm not confident I can pronounce, even though the attorney used it.
What, Quixote'd?
Quixotically.
Quixotically?
Quixotically.
Quixotically.
I gotta tell you, I'm like second grade.
Are you sure that's what it is, though? I mean,
Quixotically.
Okay.
All right, yeah. Quixotically. Pursue Title IX issues that have nothing to do with the settlement. Wow, that was a demoralizing moment for Rob Brown right there. You all got to be there for a moment of just raw, my brain gave up on me for a second. The eight women represented in the lawsuit, one of them is a young lady by the name of Lexi Drum. She is one of a number of women from the College of Charleston who filed the suit.
By the way, Quixotic actually is a word.
Quixotic is a word.
Yeah.
But then you stuck the Ali on the end. Quixotic Ali, I guess, is going to be it, and I'm going to go final answer.
The definition is exceedingly idealistic, unrealistic, and impractical.
Yeah, like I know the etymology of the word stems from Don Quixote, which I've read multiple times. It's a phenomenal story, and one that might be apt for certain situations in American politics right now. That's another story for another time. Lexi Drum, a recently graduated soccer player, said she joined the appeal because female athletes have not been given the same priority as male athletes, especially those that compete in traditional revenue generating sports such as football and basketball. She said, quote, "I think for so long female athletes have just been okay with getting whatever scraps are left and are told just to be thankful they're even competing and not aspire for more," end quote. This is a very tough spot for me because I am an advocate for women's sports. I am a supporter, a fan of women's sports. I am a full supporter and believer of Title IX and that it is an important federal mandate that I think should be followed and enforced to give women the chance to compete and to place women's sports on the map so that hopefully for those of us that do support it and believe in it, one day women's sports will be 1,000% capable of supporting itself, though we also have to recognize in the world of reality that right now they are not. Here's the issue that you're going to have right now, and I understand the young lady's perspective. I understand why she is upset by this, but here is the reality. It's a tough thing to have to stare reality in the face, but we do. As a supporter of women's sports, as the multi-year voice of the Greenville Liberty professional women's soccer team, as somebody who is going to come in here and once or twice a week make sure I'm talking about Caitlin Clark, Asia Wilson, the WNBA, as somebody who has promoted the U.S. women's national team and talked about their sport, not the drama around it, just the games. You also have to live in the world of reality. And the reality is football and basketball generate revenue for the college. Women's soccer just doesn't. Would I like it to? Yes. Do I hope that it does one day? Yes. Here's the thing. men's soccer doesn't generate revenue for the athletic department. I could be wrong. Clemson soccer won a national championship. I'm not wrong about that. I know that's a fact. They won a national championship a couple of years ago. I'd be willing to bet, however, that Clemson soccer, even on the men's side, probably cost that university money to operate. Money that is generated by the football team. Maybe a little bit by the basketball team. Maybe on its absolute best year by the baseball team. But it cost money to operate those sports. And so the claim that, and I think this is where I've landed, though again, we will have Norm O'Reilly. He is the Dean of Business, a lawyer at the University of New England. Join us on the show tomorrow, and he will probably be able to give us a bit more expertise in this. But as far as the back pay goes, the back pay is the equivalent of revenue sharing money had revenue sharing existed dating back to 2016. And the back pay, much like revenue sharing, is likely going to be dialed in primarily by the schools to the sports that build revenue to be shared, right? So like, I understand the concept. I get where this young lady's coming from. I am a supporter and advocate and ally for women's sports. But the reality of the situation is the money is going to go, as it does with everything in real life. The money's going to go to where money is generated. And in this case, yes, the back pay is going to come out of a pot of revenue that was made by the schools. And that revenue is generated by football. The College of Charleston is, I don't even have to look up the their financials. I can go ahead and tell you, the College of Charleston makes money with football. And probably, I'm willing to bet on it, nothing else. There's probably not another sport at the COC that generates money. So the question mark is going to be, and we'll find out tomorrow with Norm. The question mark is going to be, is back pay of what is effectively revenue that was that would have been shared at the time, is that going to be obligated via Title IX, not in general, via Title IX, to be shared with athletes who played in, and I'm even willing to say for men who played lacrosse, right? No lacrosse money anywhere, no lacrosse program anywhere is making money. Is there going to be an obligation for this back pay to be paid to athletes who played non-revenue generating sports? Are lacrosse players, swimmers, and divers, are they going to be obligated? Now, maybe there are some. Maybe a guy like, if there was a, you know, Katie Ledecky. Katie Ledecky has become one of the most famous Olympians since Michael Phelps, right? Katie Ledecky famously swam for the University of Florida. Could she make the argument that Florida swimming and diving generated some level of success based on her level of success, and that she deserved some element of that? Is there any NIL implication? Hey, if Katie Ledecky was able to make NIL when she was swimming at the University of Florida, she'd have been a millionaire before she went to her second Olympic Games, right? Is she going to have it? I don't know the answer to all of that. What I will say is the argument against Title IX standing is going to be no. The College of Charleston women's soccer team did not bring any money into the College of Charleston and therefore are not entitled to a revenue split. I don't know. We'll find out. Hayden S. Mario from the BetMGM Network will talk NBA Finals with us after Lonzo gives you a championship caliber sports flash.
Go team. See, I already ruined it. It's over. No championship. The Indiana Pacers are back, except for Indiana, who's going to win the championship, are back in control of the NBA Finals with a 116-107 win last night over the Oklahoma City Thunder, and now lead the series 2-1. Tyrese Halliburton had 21 with 11 assists, and Pascal Siakam had 21. Game 4 is tomorrow night. The Atlanta Braves picked up a 6-2 win at Milwaukee yesterday.
Hey!
And we have heard nothing about it, behind a complete game effort from Spencer Schwellenbach, who allowed just 5 hits and 2 runs while striking out 9. Atlanta's offense collected 10 hits, including a pair of 2-run home runs from Ronald Acuna Jr. and Michael Harris second. Game four of the Stanley Cup Finals is tonight at Sunrise, Florida. The Florida Panthers have won two straight, including a double OT thriller in Game 2 and a 6-1 beatdown in Game 3. Florida is -150 favorite in the contest.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports. Other days it's cooking or music or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.